The media is still up to its old tricks. Since the service, there have been Scud attacks on Saudi Arabia. Two of them at least, and maybe a third in progress right now. The media has been very faithful in identifying where the large air base is, where the missiles are falling, including with their bright cameras close up, taking pictures of some very confident American soldiers donning their gas masks with alertness as one stays exposed while he holds the weapon and the other one puts his gear on. Then he hands his weapon to the one that is properly covered and goes about. That one then stays alert while the first one puts his gas mask and accompanying gear on. And then while the sadistic press is doing close-ups of all this, the second soldier to get the gear finally screams at him to get those lights out of his eyes. Unprincipled jackals seeking dead bodies to gnaw on. But perhaps the all-time low was attained in reporting to date, as they're now featuring in their continued propaganda vehicular use by Saddam, the captured airman, one with a bruised face, another with bandaged hand, in subdued tones reading what sounds like some of the speeches of prisoners of war after serious torture in Vietnam, reading prepared speeches by the enemy's minister or Ministry of Information, obviously in sort of a monotone and subdued, beaten-down tonality, reading. They don't know how they were shot down, Baghdad serving speeches of why they're there, attacking the innocent Iraqi people. Now, I've been this past week reading to you some of the torture procedures of the Organization for Security developed by Saddam himself. I'll read a little more from Saddam Hussein and the Crises in the Gulf by Judith Miller and Lori Milroy. This I read the other night. I think I'll go ahead and finish it. Nabil Jamil al-Janabi, or Nabil Hamil al-Hanabi, an Iraqi poet living in exile in London, recently gave a public account of the torture he suffered at the security force headquarters in Baghdad after his arrest in March 1976. Janabi, or Hanabi, an Arab Iraqi, had read one of his poems to an assembly of Kurds at Sinjar in western Mosul province. He was arrested and driven to Baghdad. Quote, "I was taken by two very big gunmen into a single cold dark cell with no bedding. The door of the cell was opened at 3 a.m. They took me out blindfolded to an unknown place. They started torturing me by attaching one end of an electric wire to my left big toe and the other end, and because of the hour of the day, I'll edit, to my private parts. They put the power on and I lost consciousness for about an hour. Then they repeated this with the electric wire attached to my right foot. Again, I passed out. All this for reading a poem he had written to the Kurds. While I lay half dead on the floor, they tried to revive me by torturing me with cigarettes and steel rods. When I regained consciousness again, they tied my head and both legs together and put me into a tire. They started to spin it. Two men on either side kept spinning me round and round. In addition to all this, I was completely naked. They had taken off my pants. Then they started to beat me. Two men were beating me with electric rods, hitting my testicles. Nabil al-Hanabi reported that he signed a piece of paper without knowing what was on it, was sent to a, quote, revolutionary court where he was tried without the assistance of a defense minister, and was sentenced to 5 years in prison for publishing a poem calculated to incite people to act against the government. End quote. After being released, he was arrested again in 1982, held for 2 weeks and again tortured. He fled Iraq for Britain in 1983. The physician who examined him there stated, Mr. Hamil, quote, suffers from hypertension, ischemic heart disease, and diabetes mellitus. He also appears to have a lumbosacral prolapsed intervertebral disc and problems with various joints, almost certainly related to the torture to which he's been subjected. Mr. Hamil has been subjected to gross brutality and is now in a somewhat precarious state of health. Many Iraqi torture victims do not live to tell their story. Ahmed Matar, another Iraqi poet living in exile in London, wrote these lines in memory of a friend who died under torture in Iraq. They imprisoned him before they charged him. They tortured him before they interrogated him. They stubbed out cigarettes in his eyes and held up some pictures in front of him. Say, whose faces are these? He said, I do not see. They cut off his lips and demanded that he name those, quote, they had recruited. He said nothing. And when they failed to make him talk, they hanged him. A month later, they clear him. They realize the young man was not the one they really wanted, but his brother. End quote. Of course, of those who survived torture in Iraq's prisons, only a relatively few reach the West, and not all of those are willing to speak of their ordeal. One who did agree to give testimony to Middle East Watch, a former lecturer at Baghdad University, insisted on anonymity in order to protect relatives still in Iraq. Quote, they came to my house in Baghdad in December 1979, just after midnight. They broke down the door, searched the house, blindfolded and handcuffed me, hit me with rubber truncheon, and took me to Baghdad security headquarters. There I was taken to the third floor. My clothes were taken from me, and I was given a traditional Iraqi robe. I was then told, we have documents showing that you are one of the leaders of the Dawah Party. When I denied it, they said, we give you a few minutes to think it over. If you don't confess, we will torture you. I asked them to show me the documents. They replied they would do that once I confessed. After that, for 35 days, they tortured me every day or every other day. I was beaten on the feet and hung for long periods of time by my arms from ropes anchored in the ceiling. They debated whether to hang me from my arms tied behind my back, but I was much heavier then, and they realized that if they did that, the bones in my arms and shoulders would break. When they weren't torturing me, they kept me in a cell with over 100 people with no sanitation facilities. At the end of 35 days, they said they would let me go if I joined the Ba'ath Party. I refused, but they released me anyway. But every day, a security officer came to my house to question me. Colleagues at the university warned me that I was going to be arrested again, so at the beginning of March 1980, I fled the country. In a report issued in 1981, Amnesty International summarized the testimony of 15 Iraqi exiles, 12 men and 3 women, who had been tortured in Iraq in the preceding years. One of them, Burhan al-Shawi, a 24-year-old journalist and writer who was arrested in Baghdad in November 1978 and fled Iraq in May 1979, agreed to have his name used in the account he gave. Amnesty reported, quote, "During the first 2 days, he was taken to different rooms and beaten with fists, rods, and a whip. In one room, he was caressed and sexually fondled before being taken out and beaten and kicked. The torture then became more systematic, taking place every 1 or 2 hours. His head was whipped and beaten so hard that he lost consciousness. After regaining consciousness on one occasion, he was aware that his trousers had been removed and realized that he had been raped. He was then made to sit on a cold, bottle-like object which was forced up his rectum. He was also burned with a hard object about the size of a pencil." And there's 14 other similar reports of Amnesty International to follow. The indecency is that these prisoners are sure, absolutely sure, to be tortured continuously into confessions and statements in favor of Baghdad's position, as long as the media will feature their tortured and forced statements when made. The media will reply, well, the relatives at home deserve to hear this voice. And why not some responsible editing? When a prisoner is identified and we know which one it is, why not say, much to the chagrin of Baghdad, officer or serviceman such and such has been heard sending a greeting to his, or don't even say has been heard, officer such and such, we have learned that officer such and such sends greeting to his family. That's all they need to know, is that he's alive. What comfort to the family to know he's being tortured, because you might as well set yourself for it. They're a torturing breed. They are sadistic animals. They are demon-possessed from the pit of hell, forerunners of Antichrist, imbibed with the same demon spirit. And as I preach today, only a resolute people with faith in God and the courage to remove from the face of the earth another budding Hitler are going to be able to stop them. And anybody that has listened to these courageous men and their comments before being shot down knows that the speeches coming out of Iraq this afternoon are the result of torture. Now, that may bring pain to the family, but certainly no more pain than what they have seen. It's obvious. Why must the media continue to offer itself the instant and willing vehicle of Saddam's propaganda machine? If the Western media will not report these torture-induced and coerced speeches that serve Saddam's interest, the motivation for such torture, in large part, is removed. I heard someone say at one of the peace rallies, whom I've had respect for in the past, and I wonder what's happened, that the person responsible for the missiles in Israel is George Bush, one of our elected representatives at Congress. I sure hope that speech is remembered when election time rolls around again. I mean, I could not believe those words coming from a responsible elected representative. This man is a murdering, torturing, megalomaniac with a messiah complex as surely as his first rebel predecessor in the same place, Satan's substitute, Nimrod. He stands in a long succession of evil instruments of Satan. Now, you heard the message. Somebody has to stand up and tell you the truth. The comfort to be taken is that this evil man's going to lose. The comfort to be taken is that God hates Babylon and has for a long time, much more than I'm beginning to hate him. But strange as it may sound, I'm also beginning to hate the media more. And it should be named for what it is: treason. We have been known to jail and convict in jail and hold responsible owners of bars that sell liquor to a driver who, driving under the influence, killed someone. We have been known and are now starting to hold parents responsible for the acts of a teenage son or a gang member. In my judgment, the heads of the networks and the news departments should be held morally and legally responsible for every terrorist death that occurs as a result of their willing participation in passing the attack message as soon as it is given across the entire world. And in their consistent rhetorical abuse of the truth, they have pointed out many times how much a Patriot missile costs. $1 million each time it's fired. Have any of you heard any of them tell you what a Scud missile and a launcher cost Saddam that are being wiped out pretty consistently? Who doesn't have as big a bank to draw from as we do? It is weighted, prejudicial, treasonous reporting that has no respect for 460,000 of our dedicated men and women who are on harm's way. The captured prisoners need our prayers. And as George Patton once said, will some of you write a weather prayer until that cloud cover will lift in Iraq and they can blow a few more of them to kingdom come? But I'm saying what I said last week. These Iraqis shooting for cities, whereas we not only hit buildings, we hit the doors and the air vents, have landed a few and inflicted less than one casualty per missile now. That's not even a death, just wounded slightly. Until this third warning that I don't have an update on, the reports are that the Patriots have had 1,000% batting average, knocking the scuds out of the sky. We have probably sent 300 missiles into Iraq. As said already, putting them through the doors of buildings and down the air shafts. But it's bigger news that they can shoot in the direction. 3 or 4 missiles and hit Saudi Arabia. They make me want to puke. Babylon's going to lose. And the media will be reporting when Jesus and the church comes to clean house. And I'm going to lean over the balconies of heaven and listen as the best they will have to compete with in their nightly news is the consistent temperature of the lake of fire. And I don't think I'm right. I know I'm right, and I feel sorry for anybody that doesn't. So you that got some smarts about you, get on the telephone. Now tell me, there's a song by Merle Haggard, "The Fighting Side of Me." If we don't have it, I want to get it. Merle Haggard, "The Fighting Side of Me." Anaheim, I agree with Dr. Scott. How can I pick him up on radio? Every night from 8 p.m. to 12 midnight, shortwave, international shortwave radio, 31-meter band. Normally, if you have a digital shortwave, you don't need to worry about the band. 9785 is the frequency. 9785, 8 p.m. to midnight every single night. Lakeview, Oregon. The King's House says, "By the way, your Voice of Faith asked me if I had a dish number. I have a dish, but no number. Are there certain advantages to having a dish number?" The answer is yes. We are, on occasions, going to send communiques to people that have dishes that will not be sent to everybody else. So it's just, you're already at King's House. There's very little trouble to also take a dish number. Plus, it lets us calculate how many people have dishes. In a city, for example, we like to distinguish between those that are supporters that have a dish as distinct from those that don't have a dish. Otherwise, we get a false picture of how many are actually supporting the on-air station in some cities. There may not be one in your city, but one day it might. So it is important to us to be able to know how many King's dishes are out there that have a 24-hour-a-day capacity versus King's houses, many of whom have only radio or are King's houses on the frontier or have only one chance a week to see us, not a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week capacity, and how many have only a few hours a day if it is 7 days a week. So they're important numbers for us to be able to categorize the makeup of our listening audience. While the message was replaying, I turned to C-SPAN. Someone called from Michigan suggesting the advertisers be contacted to protest media propaganda. I agree with that. You hit them in the pocketbook they'll lose a lot of their holy concerns. Fullerton, I really like your teaching, especially how stupid the media is. I called CNN because it was so wrong to name and discuss the prisoners. They said their switchboards were really busy with upset viewers and hadn't been that busy before. Well, keep them busier. Keep them busier. They're contributing to the torture that is sure and certain by featuring, plus the fact there are tens of thousands that share the racist and religious view of current Iraq, who believe what they say is straight from Allah's mouth and don't believe anything else. So if it is a quote from Baghdad radio, they take it as gospel. Saddam can only survive by inflaming the rest of the Arabs and Muslims in the world. And he can only do that because the media helps him. It's the only way he can do it. So he will torture our boys who fall into his hands, and God help any of the women who fall into his hands. He will torture them to get them to make statements that give aid and comfort to his view that America really doesn't want this war, America really would leave in an instant its corrupt leaders, Bush in particular, have forced it on them. And in a perverted sort of way, Saddam might subconsciously believe that at times, because that's his method. And we tend to judge others when we're guilty of something ourselves. This dictator has got a billion dollar, multi-billion dollar, ready-made propaganda machine, the Western media. And he uses it effectively. And their glut to be the first to say something, no matter who it kills, destroys, or annihilates, makes them a ready victim to his perversion of the truth. Scream at him. Get on the phone and call him. Go ahead and jam their news lines. Insist that you talk to the anchors themselves. I mean, they won't know how to talk back. They won't have idiot cards. They won't have a pre-written speech for themselves. Go after them. Verbally teach them how to talk intelligently. Go on the telephone with me and shout hallelujah. Some people are saying, well, who do we write? Well, I mean, call your local station. That starts it. Talk to the news director. Ask for the news director and talk to him. Ask for the anchors and talk to them. See, I really want to talk to that woman anchor. And then write the heads of the networks. Look at who's the sponsors and write to their headquarters and complain. CNN's front and center, you sure know who's in charge there. Ted Turner is. I mean, he used to be a patriot. Now the big issue is whether he's going to change Jane Fonda or she's going to change him. I'd put my money on Ted. He's certainly a man of courage, I'll tell you that. If he gets convinced that his network is abusing its privileges, my bet is he'll do something about it. To write Ted Turner, CNN headquarters in Atlanta, Georgia. Some common decency and recognition of what they know. They know that they have become a willing peddler of lies that they know to be lies when true journalism searches for the truth. You call up and make some outrageous statement and try to get them to quote you, they're going to check it out. They have checked out Saddam Hussein, and they know he's lying, and they still quote him. That's not journalism. That's willing participation in propaganda from the enemy. It should be called what it is, treason. Just to keep some sanity on the bright side, and to sort of get a feel of what it's like to be in the cockpit of some of these planes, before you go see the movie, because all movies ruin books, you need to read the book, The Flight of the Intruder. It'll give you some confidence of what these airplanes can do. It's a novel, but the author is experienced and knowledgeable enough that it'll probably give you some comfort. At least you'll learn what it's like to fly an A6. And there are other similar books. I'll pull some out of my shelves to create a little bit of confidence of the technical envelope that these men and women fly in. If the spirit of the people is not allowed to erode because of the propaganda machine the media turned over to the enemy, this war is going to be won quickly. But every single report that gives aid and comfort to the enemy prolongs the war and contributes to Saddam's megalomaniac delusions that makes him think that he literally believes. He's not difficult to understand at all. The media finds it difficult to understand him because he isn't written out on an idiot card. He actually believes. He is fed on the adulation that his coercion and force and lies and methods have produced in Baghdad. He literally believes that if he can just be heard in a wider sphere, that adulation will spread. He is a megalomaniac with a messiah complex who is quite easy to understand when you quit trying to make him out a sane, reasonable man. He's a megalomaniac with a messiah complex and full of the devil. Very easy to figure out. Just like Adolf Hitler, who blinded himself that he was winning to the last moment and still felt to his dying breath he would have won, except some order he gave wasn't carried out. Deluded. And each time he hears the media report what he says, by the time it filters through his brain, he thinks it's because they know he's right. He thinks it's because he's winning. He's winning with the idea. He literally believes that all Arab nations will unite behind him. And if they don't, they're not truly Arab. And we willingly contribute to that because of some self-delusion that something about the media thinks, something about their voice and face on TV will ultimately make everything come out right. They're Pollyanna. If their face and mouth can say it first. Somehow or other, the God of get there first will make it all come out right. Well, they're stupid traitors. Harder to figure out because they ought to know better. Stupid though they are, certainly their leaders and bosses and executives should know better. And it's time that the executives understand that as all of America is having to give up certain First Amendment rights because of the abuse in the criminal element, particularly the drug element, the abuse of the media in this war is going to cost them their dearest freedoms if they don't shut up. But I happen to think most of America's had it with them. They're just not given an opportunity to voice their attitude. They are tired of being put down in their intellect, put down in their knowledge, and put down in their value judgments by these airheads that have turned news into a joke in their stupid, shallow comedy routines when they're supposed to be reporting on issues of life with responsibility. It's time for the management of the stations to announce to their news directors, if you don't start showing some responsibility, the independence that the news department has had just might find a new bridle and bit placed on it. Government is prohibited by the First Amendment. At least at the present time, from suppressing free speech. The private executive bosses who pay the $2 million salaries to these anchors do not violate the First Amendment at all. There's nothing in the First Amendment that says that your boss can't tell you to shut up or he'll take you out of your chair. There's nothing that the executives of the networks, nothing in the First Amendment says they can't say to the news director, you got until 6 o'clock tonight to being a little more responsible with your mouth, or you will be practicing your free speech on a street corner. Nothing in the First Amendment to stop that. And that's where responsibility is going to have to be exercised. You're on telephone. A lot of you say, what can we do? Well, how easy it is to think that you have to somehow go over there and win the war by yourself, somehow personally take over all the networks, and when that fails, nominate yourself President of the United States. I mean, that's the way most people react when they get stirred up, because those reactions, you know, are so far out of reach that it will siphon off your emotions and you won't really have to do anything. While all the time this afternoon, while you've been sitting there stewing and saying, what can I do, we could have had our budget out of the way until we could get on with the week. You could have made your commitments to be in the cathedral next Sunday, and you could recognize you aren't hearing this anywhere else on television and radio. And you can see the hand of God in opening up in 60 days the opportunity to wire the world for sound. You can understand that I'll be coming on about 8 p.m. Israeli time tomorrow night off the slopes of Mount Hermon, AM, FM, shortwave, with last Sunday's message and service booming into Iraq as well as Saudi Arabia. And you could do your part in that. Quit reaching so far. My voice, the only voice that's being heard saying these things right now on television, So what have you done in the last hour to do your part? Where were some of you at 11 o'clock today in the cathedral? You know what our goal is. Do what Paul asked the Corinthians to do on the first day of the week and get it done, whether I'm live or not, and have it out of the way so I can get on with being a voice. Quit making simple things complicated. There's plenty you can do. Make it easier for me to do in your place on the air as we continue to expand this voice what probably you couldn't do. If you're worked up, that means I'm saying it quite adequately. And there are a lot of encouraging words that are coming in from a lot of people that I'm not reading, but I'm getting them all. So why don't we expand this voice? I had somebody say to me today, you ought to be on 2-4. That message ought to be on 2-4-7-9-11-13. Well, there's a simple reason why it isn't. I told you several years ago, the only thing that the world's going to understand, the only thing that's going to make this ministry absolutely impregnable is about 160 million viewers. An alternative voice. Somebody said, well, why aren't our elected representatives who must know this saying something about the media? Well, you see, the media can't affect my election. I don't need them. I only need you. And will you please not let me down? William Jennings Bryan in World War I was Secretary of State, and he was fighting with President Wilson, but once we were at war, he shut up and supported his country. That's what men of character do. Granby, Massachusetts, 100% behind you. I called local WBC station, objected to the newscast. NBC says they've had several complaints today. What was the number of the message this morning? I don't know. What was it? VF726. Put it up. The message this morning was VF726. I thought you always had that character generator armed with that once you've shown it. How long is it going to take to get it up? VF726. You only had to write VF726. Don't even put it up. I've said it. They've heard it. That's enough. Sullivan, Illinois. Doc, the BBC stated they would not play that message from the prisoners on their program. Yes, Napa, California called. Yes, you can still participate in Secret 5. The new deadline is February 1st. Long Beach, New King's House. I'm joining the ranks of God's army today. I'm becoming a King's House. Yeah. Sullivan, Illinois. I hope this is true. ABC station. See, it could be the station, not the network, so I don't know which. ABC stated, well, it says Diane Sawyer, so that's network. ABC stated they're not going to report what the prisoners say. I don't know if you noticed, but right after we began hammering on this, you begin to see some changes. We don't have to be heard in every single city in America. The simple facts are most of the network producers and executives and behind-the-scenes people listen to me, because I'm the only live TV they can watch. Now, I was in Chasen's last night. Chris and I were there having dinner with Lod Cook and his wife. And producer of some of the most popular shows on television came up very kindly, said, "Doc Scott, I'm a real fan of yours," and said embarrassingly nice things. Another major producer the other night called in here and asked for the Truth magazine. I could drop his name, but won't. He's produced some of the most popular shows you see, and some of the leading stars have been under his direction. Stopped me in the Dome restaurant on Sunset quite some time ago. Sit down and says, "Gene, you've taught us all a lot of things. You've been able to experiment and do and had the courage to do things that a lot of us want to do but can't because of the restrictions on us. We're being heard. So why don't you expand that voice?" And I continue to get messages from those that have been listening on 1610 AM out of Anguilla. Toronto, Ontario picks up 1610 from Anguilla, all the way up there in Canada. Southgate. I heard a message from a Middle East philosopher on Channel 2 talking about Reinhold Niebuhr. He said, quoting him, "Men who fail to acknowledge tragedy but later discover the truth too late to do anything," and they shut him up real quick. That's Waterbury or Watertown, Connecticut. I've been calling CNN switchboard operator, and they say because they're so busy, they have no one to switch calls to. And CNN just said in regard to the pilots that they don't know if Saddam has broken the Geneva rules or not. That's a lie. They do know. They do know. A King's House from Puerto Rico. Heard the Spanish satellite reporter quoting the Pope. The Pope was very disturbed about the military actions taken against his advice. And in terms of Israel being attacked, he quoted the Pope as saying the whole problem we're facing is because of Israel's intransigence. Well, there's a prototype of the Antichrist on the scene. Prototype of the false prophets all around, too. And then there are these people running around saying they don't like having their patriotism challenged because of their peace yellow moves. Look, that's rhetoric. Words have etymological meanings. They have emotional meanings. They have reportive meanings, which is what most people traditionally understand a word to mean. And then there are stipulated meanings that people who use rhetoric like to take a word that has a good positive emotional meaning and then change it to their meaning. Patriots has a reportive meaning, and these peace yellows don't qualify. So just keep calling them unpatriotic. Fight fire with fire. Throw the rhetoric in their face. Welcome to those who join us this half hour. Every Sunday night, a host of cities join us that have not been with us since last Sunday night. And a lot has happened since last Sunday night. And throughout this day, I have been complaining about the media allowing itself to be used as an instrument of warfare, namely propaganda machine, for the enemy. We are at war. And the enemy understands propaganda. And the enemy uses propaganda with no respect for truth. All they want to do is win. It doesn't matter what they do wrong, if they are challenged and run out of all other answers, they would say with absolute conviction and convincing-sounding plausibility that they are justified in doing it
because it's dark in a certain section of the globe at that time they're talking. The connection between the reasons doesn't have to exist. They just make them exist. As, for example, the United Nations representative who is justifying a war crime and should be expelled from the United Nations for doing it, is justifying a war crime, parading of prisoners and abusing prisoners, with the non sequitur argument that America, starving and abusing 18 million people, can hardly complain about what's done to 8 or 9, or however many he said, prisoners of war. Well, prisoners of war fall into a category different from the citizens of a nation who have allowed themselves to be sucked into the rape and pillage of Kuwait and are now paying the consequences of a legally constituted coalition who are acting under that United Nations resolution to correct their wrong. But forgetting the rape and pillage of Kuwait, which is not wrong because they did it, in their view. Now, the next step of war crime activity is not wrong because we're bombing Iraq. They went into Iraq for self-aggrandizement, expansion of their self-seeking power, and economic greed. They are now paying blood for oil, because oil did motivate them, not us. There's a glut of oil on the world market. They went in because of oil and money and self-aggrandizement. Their record shows that Saddam Hussein's never given a hoot or a holler about the PLO, except where he could use them for aggressive, murderous purposes that he had, as an afterthought. Doesn't matter whether the justification's in front, at the same time, or after. They'll reach for a lie and give it as a declaration of Allah. They went into Iraq to gain the position and negotiate for the PLO. I never heard Saddam invite the PLO to settle in Kuwait. Correction, they went into Kuwait. Anybody heard him invite the PLO to, you're looking for a homeland, now you come settle the 19th province? We'll give it back to you. Or we'll give it over to you, having taken it from the princes. They're lying, manipulative servants of a madman with a messianic urge, full of megalomaniac insanity. Even Assad refers to him as that lunatic in Baghdad. Now, it's pretty bad when inhabitants of a loony asylum decide that someone is so much badder than them, they'll call him the lunatic. I have been talking considerably, having preached a message today on the subject, to the audience that's been here, some of them since 8 o'clock, because we begin earlier, and I wish that all those who join us at this hour would really listen right now when I say you could have been watching, or rather you could have been listening for 2 hours anywhere in the United States. You could have been listening the past 2 hours on shortwave radio 9785 frequency on the 31-meter band. If you get a digital one, you don't even have to worry about the band. Just dial it in. Punch it in. 9785 frequency on your shortwave radio every night, 7 nights a week, from 8 p.m. to midnight, West Coast time, 10 p.m. to 2 a.m., Dallas-Fort Worth time, 11 p.m. to 3 a.m., East Coast time, and anywhere in the United States. You could be listening right now and could have been for 2 hours and 7 minutes to 9785 on your shortwave radio. And in many of the cities, you could be listening on 1610 a.m. off the Isle of Anguilla, British West Indies. I want you to know, every television station we're on, we could disappear off of your local television station at any time. But we're always up there off Westar 5, transponder 1X, 24 hours a day. And we're always there every night for 4 hours on shortwave radio 9785. And it won't be long until we'll be 24 hours a day off some frequency in shortwave. And tomorrow night off the slopes of Mount Hermon, we'll be beaming shortwave AM and FM all over the Middle East, Israel, and over to Baghdad and down to Saudi Arabia. And that gives me great joy as some of these remarks will play thereon. So you that have just joined us, I'm thinking, as I always do on Sunday night, we'll replay the Sunday morning message. If it is your desire and you call me and say, yes, you want us to keep doing that sometime during this two-hour segment, but you have to call and encourage me to do it. Those that have been listening, I want your responses. And those that have just joined us, would you please check in and say that class is here and we're glad you're live tonight. On the telephone, please. Not only was it despicable to play along with the Iraqi propaganda machine, as I said this afternoon, if they would not play what the prisoners of war say, there would be, the Iraqis would have less of a reason to torture the prisoners to get such statements. If they can't use such statements on the international media, they have less of a reason to obtain the statements. It's the playing of the statements that encourages the torturous acts to get the statements. And Saddam Hussein has analyzed the media properly. He knows they'll play them. But then it was even more heinous to be like vultures at the homes of the loved ones, sucking on their grief and their worries and their concerns after first abusing their feelings by playing these ruthlessly obtained statements, then to gather at the homes of the wife or the relatives or brothers to add insult. You'll know why I'm saying these things when you hear this morning's message, if you just joined us. Now, during that message, you folks here in Los Angeles, Channel 30 went off the air twice. It's now back on the air with not full power. You think God's trying to say something to those of you that didn't come to the cathedral this morning? Secondarily, I am less and less sympathetic when people panic when we go off television anywhere. Because if you had your shortwave radio, you could have tuned in 9785. and kept right on listening. Well, how many times do I have to say this? Anywhere in the United States, anywhere in the Western Hemisphere, you can pick me up 8 p.m. to midnight, West Coast time, every night, 7 days a week, on 9785. If you don't have one of the shortwave radios where you just dial the numbers in, then you can... No, it's on the 31-meter band. 9785 is the frequency. Dallas, Texas. Can I get a videotape of today's sermon? It's great to hear someone, if only one person, telling the truth. They ran a crawl that tells you yes. Lakeland, Florida. How to get a tape of this morning's message. I never heard a pastor of a church teach so magnificently with these times we are in and of times to come. Boston, Ohio. I've learned a lot from Doc Scott. He's the first sensible pastor I've ever heard. Let those peace seekers go to Iraq and petition Saddam Hussein for peace and see how far they get. Some of them were cooling their heels and begging rides with the transportation the news reporters were receiving to get out of there. Fort Worth, Texas. I'm calling to say I'm behind Dr. Scott 100%, and there are 40 people with me who agree with what Dr. Scott says. It's been a real blessing to me. Dallas, Texas. How could I get him in Chicago? Could I get him on the shortwave I heard him talk about? Absolutely. 31-meter band, 9785 every night, 7 days a week. Dallas, Texas. I agree with Dr. Scott about this news media. I saw this interview on 60 Minutes bragging about how many weapons he sold to Saddam Hussein, and Jane Pauley had people almost in tears sympathizing with Saddam. Danbury, Connecticut. Never heard anybody so distinctly talk on this subject against the media. Send me some more information. You got it. The calls are pouring in. The greatest treatise on war ever written is The Art of War, Sun Tzu. He says, the reason the enlightened prince and the wise general conquer the enemy whenever they move and their achievements surpass those of ordinary men is foreknowledge. That's why they do it, foreknowledge. What is called foreknowledge cannot be elicited from spirits, nor from gods, nor by analogy with past events, nor from calculations. It must be obtained from men who know the enemy situation. Now remember, we are the enemy of Saddam Hussein. Foreknowledge is why enlightened princes and wise generals conquer the enemy. And we're the enemy of Saddam. What is called foreknowledge cannot be elicited from spirits, nor from gods, nor by analogy with past events, nor from calculations. It must be obtained from men who know the enemy situation. Now, the days in which this book was written, they had difficulty getting foreknowledge. Obtaining it from men who know the enemy situation. Now, he says there are five sorts of secret agents to be employed. These are native, inside, doubled, expendable, and living. Now today, Saddam doesn't need any one of these five sorts of secret agents to have foreknowledge. All he's got to do is get a satellite dish and tune in the media. He doesn't need any of the secret agents. The media provides him foreknowledge about what his enemy, the United States, is doing. He just has to sit back, listen to the news, and then knows exactly what to do. They're concentrating all their efforts up in western Iraq to get the Scud missiles there. So fine, under cloud cover, we'll go down and shoot Arabia. Because of the big mouth media who provides all that secret agents used to have to provide, knowledge about Saddam's enemy to Saddam. He makes sure they're not going to provide us any about him. He run them out of the country. I think I want to hear Merle Haggard again. You're walking on the fighting side of me, my fighting side.